All right, quick word about Troll Co. Clothing. Here's what I actually love about this brand. It was started by two guys who worked the oil patch. Not marketers, not guys with corporate pitch decks. Workers. They looked around and could not find any clothing that represented the life they were living. So they made it themselves. Workwear, tees, hoodies, hats. Good quality stuff. The whole brand is built around a phrase you have probably heard. Dirty hands, clean money. The idea that hard, honest work is how you build a good life. And I think most people listening to this show understand that better than they're ever given credit for by the sports media machine. So if you want your gear from a brand that actually means something and was not assembled by a focus group, go check them out. Trollco.com/Zabe. That's TROLLCO.com/Zabe. And use code ZABE25 for 25% off your first order. You know what I love about baseball? There's a game every single day. That's not a complaint. That's a gift. And right now you've got playoff basketball and playoff hockey running alongside the everyday of baseball. That's not a sports calendar, my friends. That's a buffet. MyBookie.ag has all of it. And if you're new, here's the deal. Use promo code ZABE on your first deposit. First bet loses, they give you the money back, up to $500 in free play, plus $25 in casino credit just for signing up. One rollover, that's it. MyBookie.ag, promo code ZABE. Check the site for offer details and to confirm availability in your state. Bet smart, get paid. Now, go find a game. It's charge time, everybody. Say hello to the Minnesota expat now living in the shadow of one of the greatest national parks we have, Zion National Park. Hello, Charge. Hot these days in Utah?
Yeah, 102 here today. So yes is the answer to that. And by the way, the locals would ring you up as an outsider because we don't know how to say it properly. The locals say Zion, not Zion.
It's
which
Zion.
Is how I walked in the door saying it. And then you get lovingly corrected by the locals.
So how is it correctly pronounced according to?
Take the Y out of Zion and just all one syllable, Zion.
Okay, get the fuck
Instead
out
of
here.
Zion.
You know what?
Yeah.
Listen up, locals. Get the fuck out of here. Like that. That is way too finite of a distinction to even bring up ever. But okay, you know, I just saw a video of the lovely Mariska Hargitay, who is my type, interviewing Jamie Lee Curtis, and Jamie Lee Curtis pronounced Los Angeles as Los Angeles, and Mariska Hargitay lost it. Yes. And there was like a whole discussion about, no, you wouldn't call Los Gatos Las Gatos. It's not Los Angeles, it's Los Angeles. Insists one of the greatest set of tits that ever grace the silver screen, Jamie Lee Curtis in the movie Trading Places. Oh my God! That was like the first pair of full-blown tits many of us adolescents, our age, Charge, got to see. Right?
And it ruined you for tits for the rest of your life.
Because they were perfect.
You started at A+. You'd have been happy back then in the days before internet porn, ubiquitous internet porn. You'd have been perfectly happy if they were just flabby hangers. But no, the very first ones you get to see.
Oh,
are Jamie Lee Curtis.
The flabby hangers were in National Geographic, which our parents subscribed to. You get all the flabby hangers from sub-Saharan Africa you want in that. The first pair of heaving, perfect, meaty cannons were Jamie Lee Curtis under that sweater. Oh, my God.
All right. You know, what's great for Jamie Lee Curtis, I mean, okay, granted, she had a runway from her very successful and famous parents, but she
who were her parents, for those who don't know, Charge, fill in, explain things. Come on now.
Tony Curtis, may have heard of Tony Curtis.
Broadway star, right? Tony Curtis?
And movies.
And right? Movies, okay. What was his real claim to fame, Tony Curtis?
Tony Curtis was in, he was like one of the 5 or 10 biggest stars of the 1960s.
American actor that 50s. Spanned six decades, achieving the height of his popularity in the 50s and the 60s. He was a swashbuckling, handsome leading man in such iconic films like Some Like It Hot and The Defiant Ones. Okay.
Yes.
All right.
I mean, Tony Curtis was huge.
Her
mother was Janet Lee.
Janet Lee of what fame?
Psycho fame. Getting butchered in the shower.
Janet Lee. Okay. Yes. Jeanette Helen Morrison. Born Jeanette Helen Morrison, known as Janet Lee, L-E-I-G-H. Starred in 60 films across 5 decades. And yes. Amazing. Yes, that's great pedigree right there.
That's a nice lineage, but it will also give you a head start into your acting career if you want it. But Jamie Lee Curtis has now sustained her, you know, her chops all this time. And she's had a late age resurgence of her acting career, which almost nobody gets when they're in their 60s, but she's got it right now. But I want to mention about Psycho. The brilliant thing is Psycho, spoiler alert from a movie that's 70 years old. Janet Lee starts at the very beginning of the movie. Janet Lee's the star of the movie. You see her at her job, and then she robs her employer and goes on the run. And the first half hour is Janet Lee, and then she's on the run, and she goes to the hotel, and then Norman Bates kills her. And you're like, what?
What? You know,
this was the star of the movie, right? This never happened in movies, especially back then. The star of the movie, who we had built empathy for, and even though she had robbed her employer, and then she gets murdered, and you're like, whoa.
You're like, what now?
What's the story going to be now, Psycho? Right.
Well, you can't do that now because there's too much marketing and too much budget tied up into a specific actor or actress being the leading role. And if word gets out once they screen the film that, oh, yeah, this leading character gets killed in the first 35 minutes, what are you going to do with the rest of the movie? All right, here's the story, okay? Mariska Hargitay and Jamie Lee Curtis have a heated debate mid-interview over correct pronunciation of Los Angeles. Here, take a listen.
You explained to me that you were making a doc. You explained to me that you had come back to Los Angeles, that you had gone through the beginning of the storage unit.
I'm trying not
stuff.
To laugh because you just said Los Angeles.
Okay, we had this argument. And
she says Los Angeles.
Okay, but what do you call it? Los Feliz.
Yes, but we're not talking about
you
Los Feliz.
You don't say Las Feliz.
You don't say Los Angeles. Unless
you say Los Angeles.
You don't. And if I had like a jury here, everyone would vote for me. Go ahead.
Hey.
That's so funny.
She's right.
Well, look, there people love to correct people that are out in the public eye. I begin by saying, all you people who got on my ass about calling The Who's Baba O'Reilly Teenage Wasteland in a tweet past midnight on Monday as the Stanley Cup final was finally being put to bed, you know, get a fucking life, for God's sakes, okay? Here's one I just responded to. Wolfpack Rob. No offense, but by screwing up the song title, you totally gave away your age or lack thereof. And I responded by saying, okay, I'm 50 fucking 8. I grew up playing every Who song that my best buddy Alan Abbasi could figure out the chord structure to on his Gibson Les Paul in our garage band. I made a fucking mistake at 12:06 a.m. after being ready to go to bed in a tweet. All I wanted to say was, oh my God, you should see this, the montage they just ran on ESPN that wrapped up the whole Stanley Cup playoff set to The Who's Teenage Wasteland as our closing number. You should see it. I fucked up. I forgot it's called Bob O'Reilly. Enough, people. Enough. By the way, did you see the montage?
No.
Oh, are you a montage fan?
I can be. Well done. I'm a montage fan.
Oh, it's good. It is jam-packed with assets. Very tight edits, super incredible cuts right on the beat.
What were they doing? I assume the montage was not about the Who. They did that was just part of the montage.
No, it was the musical thread that tied it all together.
Got you.
Yeah,
got you.
I can't. You do know this banger of a song though, don't you? I mean,
well, of course.
Okay, well, just asking. Because if you don't, then I'll have to shame you for not knowing.
Well, if you're gonna play it,
I'm playing it right now. Hold on. Well, I'm not sharing screen. Let me share the screen so that you can actually hear it down the line. Okay. The great thunderous drums. Now, do I know why it's called Baba O'Reilly? I do not. I could look that up. But I'll probably get one little detail wrong, and then somebody's going to jump my shit for that as well.
Sure.
I don't need to fight. All right, so you have a Who story.
I've got a good Who story for you. This is when they're putting together what would go on to be one of the great 70s rock operas, Tommy. You're familiar with Tommy, Pinball
yes.
Wizard, right?
Yes.
Yes.
Sure Pete plays Townsend, a mean pinball.
A very mean pinball. Yes. Exceptionally mean pinball. Pete Townsend is crafting this double-length album at the time. This is 1968, I believe.
Okay.
And he's crafting the double album. And all the songs, the words, the lyrics, and Tommy is going to be a messiah figure of Eastern mysticism, which was very hot at the time, thanks to the Beatles. That was super hot. The Beatles were all into their Eastern mysticism, and that was what Tommy was going to be, and he was going to have all these followers that were following his religion. And Townsend is, so this, again, this is 68. Townsend is... has ingratiated himself to the reviewer, the music reviewer at The Guardian, which was the biggest paper at the time. And The Guardian could swing the outcome of any album enormously sure. based on the review they got. So Townsend, who Tommy, it goes to this reviewer and unveils his plan. I'm going to make it about this messiah, and we're going to follow him from childhood through, you know, gaining all these followers and everything. And the reviewer goes, Pete, this has been done. I mean, this is the Beatles. We've been living this for the last year. And by the time this comes out, this is going to be old. So Pete's all dejected because he's already written 12 songs and, you know, he's got this whole thing. And then he remembers this reviewer from The Guardian loves pinball. So he starts rewriting Tommy with him being a pinball wizard, and he goes back to the reviewer a couple of months later and says, listen to this, and here's the layout of Tommy as a pinball messiah, and all these people are following him. And the reviewer goes, that sounds like a 5-star album to me.
Oh my.
And sure enough, that's how Tommy ended up being a pinball wizard. Pete Townsend was buying, he basically bought himself a good review.
Charge. That is a great story and was told in less than 3 minutes, which makes your previous filibuster on the most beautiful woman in the world look pale by comparison.
Yeah, it's no Hedy Lamarr story.
It's no Hedy Lamarr.
That's for sure.
He stands there like a statue, becomes part of the machine, feeling all the bumpers, always playing clean. Plays by intuition, the digit counters fall. That deaf, dumb, and blind kid sure plays a mean pinball. You throw in then a just thunderous, wicked Keith Moon drum fill right there.
Yeah.
Right into your veins. Now, I've been thinking about, there's been a lot of positive feedback to our Rush discussion from a week ago, and I did not forward you many of the emails. I guess I should. I'll have to do that. I know you appreciate seeing people that chime in. A lot of good positive feedback. Some nitpicking there, whatever. We have both been getting fed by the algorithm more and more content from their subsequent shows.
Yes.
As the hype
correct
and the enjoyment of Rush's newfound tour with Annika Niles, I think I'm saying that right, behind the drums. And I've just been turning over in my head, Charge, why is it instantly getting so much traction, so much speed in terms of the public and social media and everything else? And here's my theory, amongst many elements to it. It's that they're not making this music anymore. They're not making bands like this anymore. There is, I think, a palpable sense and understanding that when someday, you know, the remnants of Rush dissipate and go to dust, that's it. Just like all these great classic rock bands that used to be in abundance, that used to roam the landscape like musical dinosaurs that are going out one by one by one by one, that for them to be back and vibrant and playing well and to have new blood with this good-looking German gal who was not even a Rush fan. So somebody pointed out she had to learn 70 complicated songs of a group she never grew up idolizing, but is nailing it. That's why it's getting so much traction. Your thoughts?
Okay, two things. Number one, you are right and you are wrong. Here's where you're wrong.
Okay.
Suggesting that there are no bands out there like Rush right now is absurd. There's almost an infinity number of bands right now in existence. And it's just that there's so many. There's so many bands that it's hard to know and find all the bands that you want.
Well,
if you don't specifically look for them.
You're talking niche bands like Holy Fuck and others.
No, I'm not.
Okay, well, name me three bands. Name me three bands. Do you know the number of actual bands have been drained from the top 20 in America steadily over the last 20 years? They don't exist.
What?
Bands don't exist in the American top 20 anymore. They don't. I'll look it up for you while you go ahead.
That's not separate.
That's the conversation. It's one thing to say there's a band that sounds awesome that's kind of like Rush. They're prog rock. They're really good. And they're touring these small venues that play 2,000-3,000 people a night, if that, versus a mainstream popular sensation that everybody knows, like Rush or the Rolling Stones, etc.
Look at Greta Van Fleet as a modern day Led Zeppelin. They are clearly inspired by Led Zeppelin, sounds so much like Led Zeppelin. For Rush, there are bands like Crown Lands, Porcupine Tree, Dream Theater, Haken. There are other bands that are inspired by Rush that are out there. It's just a matter of finding them because there's an infinity number of them, in my opinion. Number two, you did get right. Here's where Zabe is 100% correct. We have now lived long enough to see many of our favorite rock icons die or get to a point where they cannot perform. You know, rock as a genre only started to really gain widespread momentum in the late 60s, and many of those people are now at an age where they can't perform. And so we better understand what it's like when those bands go away, because it's happened to many of our favorite bands. And so I think we do have a greater... And then having Neil Peart die, you know, we had assumed there was a very good chance they would never tour again. And so why is Rush so special? Because of those two elements, which you hit on. One, we lost our drummer. We didn't know if they'd ever tour again. And then two, we really appreciate the fact that this really could be the last one. I mean, who's to say they do this again after the long rush concert schedule that you and I outlined last week?
Oh yeah, they may die. So they may die. They may all die except for Annika. They may.
Right.
Getty and Niels may die before you know this thing is over. It's so long. I just don't want them to die until we can see them in D.C. in October, where I'm working on tickets. What do you mean you're working on? Well, I mean I would like to find
working.
In my mind, I'm like, hey, you should call somebody about tickets. Who? You got no con? Shut up! I'm gonna find them. Gotta go to StubHub. All right, here's your answer. Ready? Bands have not vanished entirely, but traditional groups are extremely rare on the Billboard Hot 100, often falling out of the top 25 altogether. The mainstream chart is heavily dominated by solo pop, hip-hop, and country artists. And they list the various factors why. Okay? That's my point.
Why? What are the I'm most interested in what are the various factors?
One is
for which we do not have bands.
One is, the number one is label preferences. Record labels find it more cost effective and efficient to manage, market, and brand a single artist rather than splitting their revenue, tour budgets, and promotional efforts among multiple band members. It's cheaper. So once again, efficiency economically has produced shittier stuff. Boo. Hmm. Social media virality is another one. TikTok thrive on individual creators, not bands. Also, the bedroom producer model with modern software and home studio equipment. It's cheaper and easier for a solo artist to record, produce, and release a song. See Eilish, Billie. She's entirely a bedroom star from her parents' house in Southern California.
Increasingly, you and the help of software can become the whole band, play every part. And, you don't need to have a guitarist and a bass player and a drum and a singer. Yeah.
So I think
you don't have to have those things anymore.
I think one big factor is that there is an understanding of the preciousness of things that are going away to make sure to hug them while they're still here in play. And the second thing is we're becoming more and more of an experiential society. Because being online is so ubiquitous and we're all online way too much all the time, that the desire and the urge to go out and be amongst people and experience things is driven the popularity and the cost of doing all that, whether it's concerts or Instagram style tourism or golf destination trips. They're all going up in price. People want to get out and experience things, charge more and more. My two theories.
I think I think people do want to go out and experience things. And if you're a solo artist, when you go on tour, you split the revenue one way.
Yeah.
If you are you're a four-piece band and you're splitting the revenue four ways, it's a lot harder to make the economics work.
You feed peanuts to your supporting musicians who are in the band, but nobody knows who they are because they're not important. Yeah. And then that's too bad.
Your name's on the band.
That's too bad. The World Cup is also gaining momentum like a snowball rolling downhill because of the experiential economy that we live in, and this wonderful influx of Europeans of all different stripes and international players from beyond just Europe coming to America and seeing our amazing abundance and, most importantly, our hospitality, that we are not at all what the media has portrayed the U.S. to be. The negative drumbeat in the mainstream media outside of our borders about what America is, an orange man bad, is being decimated in real time on a daily basis across hundreds of thousands of social media accounts of people going, oh my God, this is so great. Oh my God, these people in Alabama are so friendly. Oh my God, you didn't tell me how fun a Red Sox game would be. How about the Tartan Army marching to Fenway Park and taking over Fenway Park?
Oh, it's fantastic, Zabe.
It is so good.
Can I tell you why I think this is happening? And I'm curious if you agree. So there's 11 venues in the United States and a couple in Canada, a couple in Mexico. But everybody's driving from venue to venue. Not everybody is just getting a concrete jungle experience. They're seeing all the, you know, these big swaths of America that people do not normally see because they're driving. They're going to small towns, medium-sized towns, and they're not just flying into JFK and taking an Uber over to MetLife and then going home.
Right.
Instead, they're flying to JFK, they're going to MetLife, but then game two is in Kansas City, and they're getting in their car and they're driving. And so that's why I think this has been magical. The thing that I see in common with so many of the international visitors that are here is they're falling in love with middle America.
Yeah.
Not the cities of America.
Right. Right. Flyover country and small towns and the real people and the people that make this country happen in between the coastal elites. It's beautiful. Also, they are raving about our stadiums, Church. They are blown away by our stadiums. And the point has been made about how when they first awarded the World Cup to the U.S., there was a little bit of groaning from the international sector. Oh, the Americans, you know, they don't like soccer. Well, now that they've come here, they're like, holy shit, your stadiums are huge and they're awesome. And it was pointed out that many other host countries, Russia, Brazil, Qatar, had to build a bunch of stadiums.
They had to hurry
to build them, right? Meanwhile, they come here to the U.S. and they see Jerry World and they see SoFi and they see Foxborough and they see MetLife. And we're like, yeah, no, we got a whole bunch more. Like, we have a whole bunch of college stadiums that we could hold probably 3 World Cups right now. Like, and it wouldn't even strain us. We wouldn't have to build a damn thing. The only thing we did was we swapped out the AstroTurf for grass. And that was it. And it makes you appreciate, again, as an American who takes these stadiums for granted. I mean, hell, the European mind cannot comprehend the fact that we throw away perfectly good stadiums. Like,
we do.
The Broncos are throwing away
a perfectly
good stadium in Denver.
The Browns are throwing away a perfectly good stadium. The Kansas City Royals are going to throw away one of the great throwback stadiums from, you know, it's whatever, 70 years old, and it's a great stadium. It does not need to be thrown away.
And the Chiefs are throwing theirs away as well. Penny. Yes, one of the most revered, hardest venues to play and win in. The vaunted Arrowhead with its stupid oval-shaped jumbotron. They're throwing that away to go build a more expensive one. I found out from my buddy Houston Scotty today that they want to get rid of Reliant. They're like, no, we want a new one down here. I'm like, what? You still got the fucking warranty on Reliant. The hell?
I kept the receipt.
Yes. All right, I'm going to be honest with you. I'm a blackjack guy. Always have been. It's the one casino game where your decisions actually matter. Hit or stand, double down, split. You're not just watching a slot machine and hoping for the best. MyBookie.ag has live dealer blackjack. Real person, on camera, dealing cards in real time. And a full casino beyond that. Roulette, crap, slots, poker, all of it right on your phone. New players get $25 in casino credit just for making a first deposit. Use promo code ZABE. Go try the tables on them. MyBookie.ag, promo code ZABE. Check the site for offer details and to confirm availability in your state. Bet smart, get paid. So that's been also great as well. Now, the Scots are a whole nother level. I assume you've heard now their unofficial anthem, The Flower of Scotland, which was sung at full bore at Foxborough before their match.
Yeah, I didn't understand any of it, but I saw and heard it. I don't know what they were saying, but
I've looked up the words and I've looked up the sort of the backstory on it, but here is what it sounded like. I mean, they weren't just singing it. They were belting it the fuck out.
Yeah.
They're actually sort of distorting the microphones. It's so loud.
Amazing.
So this song is not the national anthem, by the way. It's sort of their adopted soccer anthem.
Patriotic song. Right? I think they all have that.
Patriotic song commonly used as the unofficial national anthem of Scotland, written in the mid-60s by folk musician Roy Williamson. Its lyrics describe the victory of Robert the Bruce, King of Scots, over Edward II, King of England, in the Battle of Bannockburn in 1314. Ooh. Owing to its historical basis in the Wars of Scottish Independence, it urges contemporary Scots to rise again as an independent nation and remember the day their ancestors deterred Edward's English invaders. We take for granted just how ingrained in their culture this is, and how the Scots, they don't necessarily hate the Brits, but they got no use for them. And they don't want them fucking doing anything with their country, economy, or laws.
I think the Scots have represented themselves extremely well. It sounds, when you hear them singing that, it sounds like what you always hear in the British matches, where you hear they're singing something. I don't know what the hell they're singing, but they're singing something. And I think it's great that they've brought it here. This sounds like you're describing Braveheart, by the way. I mean,
is it?
Are we not talking about a battle in Braveheart right now?
Yes. Yes, we are. Yes, that's the whole movie.
I think we are. Braveheart is such a freaking great movie, Zabe. I assume you've seen it. Mm-hmm. Maybe not recently. Probably not recently.
Don't ask me to quote
it. It's fantastic.
Shot for shot, but yes. Oh, flower of Scotland, when will we see your like again, that fought and died for your wee bit hill and glen, and stood against him, proud Edward's army, and sent him homeward to think again. told Edward II, take that, motherfucker, and go back across the channel, because we're Scots.
Love it.
All right. Speaking of taking your ball and going home, Brendan Sorsby is no longer going to play at Texas Tech. Debacle for Texas Tech from start to finish. That nobody in the room had the balls to stand up and say, this is not going to work out. We're not going to just wipe this under the rug, get over it. The rest of the conference and the rest of the country is going to be fucking pissed. And there's going to be legal issues as well. It ain't worth it. This is not the second coming of Peyton fucking Manning, okay? Let's find somebody else. Nobody had the balls to say that. They really thought they could get away with this. Did you see the Texas Tech, whoever it was, their brain trust, five dudes sitting at a big table recorded a 26-minute video explaining their side charge of this decision. And people
It takes 26 minutes, you're not going to win the battle. Right. Nobody's going to do that.
Right. And just so dumb. And here's where they really fucked up. And that is the Texas Attorney General, Ken Paxton, actually filed a motion that said to the rest of the conference, if you even think about enforcing your conference rules about, no gambling on the fucking games you're playing in, if you even think about enforcing your rules, we will sue you. And so that gave Texas Tech the opportunity, if not the impetus, if not the obligation, to go run to court and file in their behalf. It basically dragged Texas Tech into court, and then Texas Tech's like, oh, fuck. Now we're going to have to defend ourselves in court, discovery, document searches. Oh, God. It ain't fucking worth it. So they cut the cord. Now some are saying
it's not worth it, and they did.
Yeah. Some are saying to me he was paid, that Sorsby was paid to go away. Nothing would surprise me in the sleazy underworld of college football, but Jesus, I hope not. Any further thoughts on this?
Come to this. Let me tell you about the fantasy ramifications, which has become very significant.
Fantasy.
Here's where, yes, this is important. We care about fantasy football.
He's going to the supplemental draft, which has not been deployed for several years in the NFL.
I thought they deployed it every year, but nobody ever got taken.
Mm. Maybe you're right. I think it's been a while since somebody has been taken.
And it's been a long time since anybody notable has been taken, like, I don't know, 12 years or 15 years or something. But here's where it's turned into a bit of a fantasy debacle is many dynasty leagues where you draft all the rookies for the year. That draft's already happened. So I'm in a dynasty league where the rookie draft and distribution already happened.
Really?
And Sorsby's pretty interesting, right? He's a quarterback. A lot of leagues allow two quarterbacks. He's pretty interesting. So now how do I award Sorsby to one of my teams? And I think the answer is, Zabe, much like the supplemental draft, you find out which team is willing to pay the most. You basically say, all right, who's paying 2027 draft picks? If you're paying a 2027 first rounder, you can get in the mix. If you're only paying a third rounder, you can't get in the mix. So that's how I think I'm going to handle this with my teams. Is I'm going to do it that way and have people just bid future picks, and whoever does, you know, I'm doing a first and a fifth. I'm doing a first and a third. Well, basically auction off Sorsby to fantasy owners.
That is hilarious. Are you kidding me? There's fantasy implications for a guy who is not only not in the league right now, but hasn't even been drafted supplementally. That's nuts.
That's right.
Yeah. Okay. Shaking hands in sports. A lot has been made of Wemby just clomping his big old giraffe feet off the court, as well as the rest of the Spurs, giving no handshakes after they got beat in five by the Knicks. Jay Williams on
ESPN.
That would
never happen in hockey, Zabe. Never happen in hockey.
Exactly. And Jay Williams on ESPN said, shaking hands, that's what you do in Little League. But I've seen a lot of people showing clips of former NBA superstars, even after they've suffered a bitter defeat in the finals, taking time to come give a sincere handshake. Not just a blow-by, but a handshake and a hug, star to star. Steph Curry to LeBron James, Durant to, you know, whoever. Like, these are not low-level guys. Same. It's not as organized as the hockey handshake line, but, you know, there are genuine moments of respect, and I'm a sucker for that. I still get really juiced up for that because I want to see the best of the best in the sport show mutual respect when it's all said and done. It's over. Series is over. There's a winner, there's a loser. Deal with it, okay? But show some fucking respect to your fellow pros. I'm big on the handshake.
I love the handshake. The fact that they can do it in hockey where they've just spent up to 7 games beating the crap out of each other.
Murdering
slashing
each other.
Hooking each other, boarding each other, punching each other. And then at the end of the game, no matter how much blood has been spilled, they are in line doing the handshake at the end. And I like that part. I like that part. For the Minnesota Timberwolves, when they got knocked out by the Spurs, Anthony Edwards, with 7 minutes left in the game, in the deciding final game, with 7 minutes left, he went over to the bench and congratulated them, all the Spurs, personally.
Which some people thought was a little bit out of bounds, that he should not have done that at that time. That was an early exit by him, which was kind of rude because it separated him from the rest of the team, right? Like, I'm too good to stick around till the end, so let me take care of this now. Good game, good game, good game.
Yes. Well, it is. I did not have a problem with it. It's not like he left the stadium, to be clear. It wasn't like he then left the stadium.
No, I know.
He was sitting
on
the bench, but apparently he had something he wanted to say and delivered the message in person. It's just odd that there was still 7 minutes left in the game.
Also, somebody dredged up the old Jordan handshake highlights against the Pistons. This was like year two or three or three of Jordan when the Pistons were still the bad boys and you couldn't get past them. And they had lost game 6, I believe, at home in Chicago. And, you know, the home crowd is giving Mike a rousing ovation because he did all he could with an inferior team. Averaged 35 in the series. Averaged 35 against the Pistons.
That's amazing.
And the Pistons were absolutely shooting him out of the sky with hard fouls on a nightly basis. And he just took it. Never lost his cool, Michael Jordan. And as the game was winding down, he was being checked out for the last time. He had genuine look-him-in-the-eye handshakes for all of the Piston players that he played against. Isaiah Rodman, who was a known cheap shot guy.
Yes.
Fuck yeah. If Jordan can do it, Wemby should learn. Wemby has taken a turn for the worst. It's not just me. Every pundit I see online has said, wow, did his rep go into the toilet quick after just one series? What did you think about that?
Well, I think, you know, okay, he didn't help himself. But, you know, at the end of the day, they probably win next year and all will be forgotten. You know, they're going to be they are going to be a massive force next season. And I would not be at all surprised if, you know, if Wemby's, I don't think he's done any permanent damage to himself that can't be fixed. He's young, right? He doesn't, you know, he doesn't know all the protocols. He didn't know how to handle himself in this situation very well. I believe by the time we roll around to next season, we'll have forgotten almost all of that. And we'll just be talking about the freaky unicorn that he is.
Okay. I can't endorse the whole, he's young, doesn't understand it, but I will agree. Winning is the ultimate deodorant. And winning covers everything. So you're right. So next year, if he's winning, it'll be a whole new narrative. New narrative, who dis, as we like to say sometimes.
Yeah.
How do you feel, though, about the fact that there is a disturbing list of former Minnesota stars who have immediately won a title with their new teams? For example, Karl-Anthony Towns left Minnesota 2024. 2 years later, wins the NBA title. Sam Darnold left Minnesota in 2025. A year later, wins the Super Bowl. Kevin Love, 2 years after leaving the Timberwolves, wins in Cleveland. Kevin Garnett in 07, 1 year later, wins with the Celtics. And then
David Ortiz
in 02 won the World Series 2 years later. So that's Ortiz, Garnett, Love, Darnold and Cat all winning a title within 2 years or less of leaving. It's not just your generational drought of championships in Minnesota, which I already feel terrible about bringing it up yet again because it's your life and you've lived it and you've known it. I had no idea that also your star players didn't leave and, you know, struggle and go into oblivion. They left and then went to the mountaintop. Fuck, man.
Yes. Now, and even worse, Zabe, in virtually all of those cases, these are players that we gave up on. It's, you know, these are players that we trade. Karl-Anthony Towns never wanted to leave. He was heartbroken that he got traded.
Really?
Didn't want to go. Let him go. Sam Darnold repeatedly said he wanted to stay. Just make me the, so all he asked for was to be the starter. That's it.
Yeah.
And bang, that's all it took. You know, we didn't keep him. Now, then he goes, wins in Seattle. Kevin Garnett, he never once said he wanted to leave Minnesota, but he didn't get along with ownership. And ultimately, we made an incredibly bad trade, gave away Kevin Garnett. Or Ortiz was an off-injured twin. We gave him away for peanuts, and then he turned into one of the great sluggers in baseball history. I mean, it's so Minnesota, tragically. So on brand for us, and here we are just struggling through another season in which all of our major teams will not win a championship.
Is it going to be a down year for everybody?
Twins are already dead in the water. They're mathematically eliminated and it's June. So
no hope for the Kyler Murray led Vikings.
The Wolves just got bounced in the last month. So the last hope here would be the Kyler Murray led Vikings. And I don't think they're likely to win a championship.
Okay. You're counting the wraparound. I consider this the end of the sports year. I consider now we just closed.
That's fair.
The only thing that obviously carries over is baseball, but I consider baseball part of the next set. Even though most of the regular season happens, obviously, in this calendar year. Like, if you're going to bundle up the sets of our major winners. Here's our set of six big time. Here's our set of the six major sports. Okay, that would be the four pro sports and then college football, college basketball. Ready? Baseball, yep. It's the Dodgers by the skin of their teeth, the Seahawks, the Hurricanes, and the Knicks, with Indiana in football and Michigan in basketball. That's your six. I think your T-Wolves have a shot next year, and I think the Wild has a shot next year. I don't think your Vikings have a shot.
You don't think they have a shot? Oh, well, I do.
Okay. But
not much.
A shot. No. Okay, not you much. Got a shot. I mean, it's football. Yeah. Stranger things have happened, right?
Yep, but it's not. But if you ask me, the odds are they're 8.5. Their win total, Vikings win total predictions, 8.5 games. That sounds about right.
Who's got the best shot of the three? The Vikes, the Wolves, or the Wild?
The Wild. I don't want to bore everybody with Wild talk, because I know most of your listeners don't care about hockey, but the Wild are kind of like one player away from being the best team in the league from a player standpoint. And there's a lot of talk about them making a splashy move in the offseason. And if they do, the Wild are really close. They had the second most points in the regular season last year and then ground down a long series with Colorado, enough that Colorado walked into that Vegas series and got bounced. So, yeah, the Wild are actually, they're the best. They are the closest team in Minnesota.
You know what would have made that Wild discourse better? A little bit of Hedy Lamarr thrown in. Just a teeny tiny bit. All right, lastly, Charge, you love barbecue as much as I do, right?
Yes.
A French guy tried brisket here for the World Cup, and his world is never going to be the same. Not just brisket, but also other parts of America. Take a listen to this Frenchie talking about how his world will never be the same.
We need to talk about l'Amérique. As French, we need to stop saying vive la France and start saying vive l'Amérique. This place is incroyable. C'est incroyable.
Incroyable.
I just had Texas barbecue for the first time in my life. Poof. Poof. Better than any moment in my life. And I am married and have two kids. Oh, but in France, you have the crêpes, le petit pain au chocolat, le croissant. No, I give my left croissant for a Texas brisket. Don't even get me started on Costco. Costco is bigger than my village where I live. Whatever you want at Costco, it's there. You just show up and you could buy your whole life there. You need to start a revolution just to get Costco in France. I will be the first one to say I will start a revolution to get a Costco. Les Italiens, Italians... I'm sorry, but ranch makes pizza better than anything I've ever tasted. When you go to a restaurant, you leave a tip. It's because they're so nice. But my waitress, she came over and talked to us like we had known each other for years. It was like she wanted to be my best friend. And at the end, I felt stupid not to leave a tip. In France, they want to take off the tip of my head. Speaking about how nice and friendly these Americans are, I think in France, I can count on one hand how many people have smiled at me. Just normally, just smile, you know. I think my mother has smiled at me twice. Here, just going down the street, everybody says hi. Like, what do you want? What do you mean hi? What do you mean bonjour? Oh, hi. This is a normal road in America, and this is bigger than the Champs-Élysées. This car right here is called a Waymo. Waymo? Is this? C'est ça? Yeah, Waymo. And for the longest time, I wondered why it was called a Waymo. It is because America has way more than the rest of the world.
Waymo.
Amen to that. All right, Charge, anything you want to add on the way out the door, man? Another great run with you today.
No, it's been a ton of fun.
What are you doing on the great outdoors this weekend up there?
Well, we just got done. We had friends in from Minnesota, and we did the long tour of all the big sites on the side by side. We did some trail riding, let our guests do some driving out on the trails, and it was awesome. Then we packed up, went down to for 2 days in Vegas at Circa. You know, I love Circa.
Oh yeah.
We went to Stadium Swim and we bet on the World Cup while we lounged in the Stadium Swim
pool. They played the soccer match on the Jumbotron. I see there's been watch parties for Team USA. I saw where Derek Stevens, the beautiful mastermind of Circa and those other properties down there, has invited that guy, Freddie LA7 from Germany, out to Circa to see a watch party. He said he's going to bring his private plane, send the private jet to go get Freddie.
Yes.
It's too much, Freddie.
How awesome is that?
It's awesome, but we're giving too much to Freddie LA7, I'm afraid.
It's spread out. You want to spread out the love a little bit. I think you might enjoy this, Zabe. So we're watching these games, and it's four games on Monday, and we're in the pool. First game I missed because I wasn't up and around yet. Second game, it's a draw. And I'm like, you know what? It's hot and humid in a way that these Europeans don't know. These teams are sluggish. They're not moving very fast. So we parlayed the final two games with draw and draw.
Well,
and it paid 16-1 when those two games went draw and draw. And it turned out the entire day, all four matches were draws.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing. That's why some people have said the reason soccer fans like to sing and chant so much is the fucking games are often boring. Nothing else happening. If you don't learn to sing together as a group, you're going to hate going to soccer games over in Europe. Just saying.
I think there is some truth to that. You got to fill in a lot of time on your own. Now we have commercial breaks, which by the way, they now have this too. They got the hydration break, Zabe, which is
worse.
We all know it's just a commercial break and nothing more than that.
Do you know that apparently Fox has made upwards of $250 million selling extra ad inventory for the hydration breaks?
What?
Yes, the hydration breaks were never supposed to be commercials. It was only sort of in the last couple weeks that FIFA quietly told Fox, yeah, if you want to throw some in there, that's fine by us. Because, you know.
What?
You know, had they said from the get-go, we're adding hydration breaks, and we're going to let Fox, our North American partner that bought the rights to this thing, go ahead and sell ads, there would have been rioting in the streets. This had to be snuck under the wire at the last minute. And the estimates are $250 million or more.
I mean, unbelievable. I'm not surprised to hear it. And it's so lame. And by the way, I know it's a dead topic and I'm not even trying to restart it. I hadn't watched soccer in a long time. All of the writhing on the ground and, oh my God, my leg, I'll never walk again. You know, amputate me now, screaming, writhing, you know, all that stuff.
Yeah.
It's so freaking lame.
It's bad. But unfortunately, we got it in our sports now. It has spread like a virus, and I would love to get rid of it, but don't know how. All right, Charge, as always, great to talk to you, buddy. Take off, Hoser.
Thanks, bro. See you, pal. Talk to you next week.
See you.
Brother Doug, how's it going, eh?
Beauty, eh?
Yeah, I like that.
Okay.
Okay, everyone, this record was my idea.
Get out.
It was. You're lying.
The betting calendar is absolutely loaded right now. Baseball in full swing. NBA, NHL playoffs already underway. If you want to get really spicy, you can even bet the WNBA. Look, I'm not judging. Action's action. The question is, where are you betting? Because that matters just as much as what you're betting. That's why I go to mybookie.ag. And why you should too. New to MyBookie? Use promo code ZABE on your first deposit. If your first bet loses, you get a full refund up to $500 back in free play, plus $25 in casino credit just for showing up. MyBookie.ag, promo code ZABE. Check the site for offer details and to confirm availability in your state. Bet smart, get paid.